Henan Adas Yisrael together with Torah away. Monday, second day of Slichas, Chof Gimel Elul, 19th of September. Harav Shlomi Yitzchok Bitzin Shmana Shlita, the monarchy and Jewish kehillas throughout the ages.
Today, Be'ezus Hashem, in line with the country being in mourning for Her Majesty the Queen, to whom we, the Kehillah, owe a lot of Hakaras HaToiv. So the shir will be about the monarchy and the Jewish Kehillahs throughout the ages. So first of all, we'll start with what everyone knows, the famous Mishnah, Masechtas Ovos, Havei Mispalel B'Shloima Shamalchus, which means that Chazal understood that it's extremely important to be part of the Malchus and to show them that we care about them and we're just not doing our own thing and ignoring what's going on. The truth is that throughout history, this was always something that everyone understood. You know, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to understand that, you know, that's the right thing to do, both from a theoretical point of view, but even from a practical, pragmatic point of view. What's the point in fighting the establishment? You're not going to win anyway. The only problem was that many times the Kehillah found themselves between two factions. You had in many countries where you had, you know, two sides. And the question always was on which side to be. And sometimes the Yidden found themselves in the wrong side and that was big trouble. So the concept of Mispalel B'Shloima Shamalchus is something that in England is very much accepted. In many, many kehillas, they do that more so than in America, for example. Not as many kehillas are Mispalel B'Shloima Shamalchus, but in England, this has been the tradition for many, many years. I myself have a collection of a few pamphlets that came out over 100 years ago for the coronation of certain kings. I don't remember all the names, and you know, it's not easy to remember all the names, but very interesting how this was something that was very much part and parcel of what the Kehillahs did. Now, there's another point that we need to appreciate. Not always have we been allowed to participate and to partake in things that went on in the Mitzad Malchus, Mitzad Monarchy, even if we wanted. There's the infamous story that happened here in England in the year 1189, when the coronation of King Richard, it was called Richard the Lionheart, by his coronation, there was a terrible, terrible pogrom. Many Yidden were killed, including one of the famous Balei Tosfos, Rabbeinu Yaakov Meorleans. Orleans is a small little place in France, and he came from Orleans, and many Balei Tosfos in those times, they were mainly Talmidim of the Rabbeinu Tam, and they would shuttle, they would ferry from England to France back and forth, and there was a very strong connection between the Balei Tosfos in France, in southern France, and many Rishonim here in England. And this Rabbeinu Yaakov Meorleans, as they say, was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he was killed, Al Kiddush Hashem. And basically, the story goes somewhere along the lines that when the king was coronated, the Kehillah wanted to come and participate. As we said, it's a logical thing. Why not? And they weren't allowed. They were told explicitly, you are not welcome, we don't want you. So obviously they couldn't come. But as the party and as the celebration was quieting down, there was a delegation of the Kehillah that came with gifts. This was always very common. They used to bring gifts to the king, to the queen. This was very much part of the Mispalel B'Shloima Shamalchus. So they came, a delegation came to the place where the coronation took place. It was very quiet, people were leaving, and they wanted to offer their gift. And basically they were thrown out with bushes and harpas, they were stripped naked, and some people took that as an indication that the king agrees to, that they should go out on a rampage. And that's what people did. In the end, those that did it were held accountable and they were executed. But for us, the damage was done and we lost one of our the biggest Balei Tosfos. He's brought down many times in Tosfos, the Re-Meir Linus, Rabbi Yaakov Meir Linus. And that is something which happened here in this country. So basically what we see is that the fact that these days we have access and, you know, many Yidden are invited to the palace and many Yidden, you know, have get honored there and so on, that is something that we shouldn't take for granted because it hasn't always been the case. And actually his yahrzeit, the yahrzeit of the Re-Meir Linus was last week Thursday. Yutes Elul, that's when it happened in the year 1189. So this puts things into perspective that we are living in a Malchus Shel Chesed and we're living in a time where we have the ability to participate and, you know, many Yidden went and, you know, paid their respects and so on. So we shouldn't take it for granted. Now, just to touch on another Nakuda, there has been many different opinions flying around about, you know, making different celebrations. Can you not? In other words, what it should be, how should we look to the street or to the people around? What should they perceive? In other words, should we walk around with our heads bowed down? And what exactly is the Nekuda? So just to find in Chazal, we have such a thing that the Gemara tells us in Masechtas Tanis, Daf Chav Zayin Omid Beis, the Gemara says that there was a concept of Anshei Mishmar and Anshei Mamad, which means that every time that they brought Karbonas, there was a rotation of different Kohanim that or Leviim, there was a, or Yisraelim, there was, everyone had their job. So there were people that their job was to just be there, because the Gemara says, how could you be makriv a carbon and people aren't there standing by? So there was a rotation of people who were called. There was Anshe Mishmar, Anshe Mamad. The Anshe Mishmar is the Kohanim. The Anshe Mamad were Yisraelim. And basically, the Gemara says that the Anshe Mamad were miskansen lebeis haknesses v'yoyshvin dalat tanyos. They would fast 4 days a week, because this went on every single day. But out of the 6 days of Yemois HaChoil, the weekdays, there were 4 days that they fasted. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So the Gemara says, why didn't they fast on Friday? Friday, the Gemara says, is because of Shabbos. Mipnei Kavod Shabbos, they didn't want that they should come into Shabbos hungry. And Avad, the Shabbos itself. But the question is, why didn't they fast on Sunday? Sunday, you know, many people like fasting on Sunday. After eating the Shabbos, you know, it makes it a bit easier. So the Gemara says, Omar Reb Yochanan, Mipnei ha-noitzrim, because of the noitzrim, and Rashi says, Sho'oisim oiso yontev shalohem, Sunday is a holiday, so today, it's, you know, people don't work, but in the times when they were religious, you know, they went to, you know, they went to pray, and they went to do services. In other words, Sunday, I believe, even in this country, not so long ago, you know, there were goyim that didn't do any malacha, they didn't, you know, they didn't do anything on Sunday, right? Their Sunday is like Lahavdul Elaf Alfay Avdolos, our Shabbos. So Rashi says, because it's a yontah for them, we don't want to fast. Why? Because if we fast, we're showing that, you know, we're like sort of ignoring what they're doing. Now, it's very interesting because here we're talking about Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was very close to the period when it all started. The Notzrim started 70 years before the second Churban Beis Hamikdash. So we're talking about relatively a new thing. And anyone that knows a bit of history, they took everything that they have, they took from us, right? And not only that, there's a whole history which we once mentioned. One of the biggest Galochim, St. Peter, he is the one who sort of separated. They used to keep Shabbos. Shabbos was their day of rest. But the problem was that there was such a confusion. In other words, there were many Yidden that sort of thought that they're Yidden because they were doing the same thing. So he made sure that there's a Sunday, there's a Shabbos. In other words, choose. Are you with us or are you not? So the whole Sunday was something that was created by one of us for them and in order to help us. So, you know, why all of a sudden can't we do what we want to do on their Sunday? But we see that there's a concept. If the majority or a big, as they say, a vocal minority, right? So even if they're a minority, whatever it is, but, you know, at that time, just behave, as they say, when you're in Rome, you do as the Romans, and mefrektish kankashes. So we see a concept that when a country is in mourning, whether you agree or you don't agree, it doesn't matter, but there is a concept of don't go beferish, befahesia, and do something which may, you know, make them think that you're not agreeing or you're not part of it. I saw in a sefer, I'm not old enough to remember, but there are many people in this room that are old enough to remember. In 1963, November was when Kennedy was assassinated. He was assassinated on a Friday. Here was already Shabbos. It was about 12:30 in America, in Texas. So it was on Friday. That Motzeh Shabbos, the Satmar Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Livracha said, you shouldn't dance by Kiddush Levona. It was the time of the month that they were making Kiddush Levona, and the Shulchan Aruch says you should dance, and the Rebbe said, don't dance. So you're going to be mevatel halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Why? Because what would it look like if all of a sudden you have Yidden dancing and the country is in mourning? Now, you know, Kennedy wasn't the queen, and it's a different story in Gunson. It's not the same setup as here, but you see a sensitivity that the country was in shock, and everyone was in mourning, and here you're going to dance for Kiddush Levona. The Goyim are not going to say that you're dancing for Kiddush Levona, because try to explain to a Goy why you dance for Kiddush Levona, but that's a different story. But Lamaise, they're going to say, look at the Eden, you know, the whole country is in mourning, and here they found a reason to dance. So this is something that you see, there's a certain sensitivity that, you know, we need to have towards things that are going on, and we can't just, you know, make our own decisions. You see that there was this type of approach. There's a fascinating Chassam Sofer, a drosh in the Chassam Sofer. Now, a big part of the shiur will be about the different kings that ruled in Austria, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, because most of the droshes and most of the history that you see about speaking and darshaning for the king happened in Hungary, or at least that's what's recorded. Most of the droshes that are recorded took place throughout the years. We'll try to go through, maybe a bit boring, the history of who was when and so on, but we'll see how, you know, most of the recorded droshes and things are things that went on in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So the Chassam Sofer, in his time, there was the King Franz I. He was a grandfather of the famous Franz Josef. The reason why Franz Josef was so famous is, first of all, you know, he was a king for 68 years. Not 70, but 68. He became king when he was 18, and he died when he was 86. And there's an interesting story that he had one son who was the crown prince. In 1889, he committed suicide. Maybe he got some wind that his father is going to live so long. So, you know, he knew that he's not going to make it. So he decided, why wait till then? But the point is that his father was considered at that time the longest reigning monarch. I think he was number 7 in the world history. So now we already have, you know, someone that beat her, at least that we know. But the point is that his grandfather was Franz I, and he was the king in the times of the Chassam Sofer in the first part of the 1800s, and he died in 1835. Now, he was king in Austria mainly. That was that was his in Vienna, the palace, and you can still see it today, the palace in Vienna. So the Chassam Sofer writes in one of his droshes, this is always what I've always looked out for. You know, you have a tshuva, you have a thing. So there's the actual Torah, right? But I don't think that anyone here came to hear exactly what the Chassam Sofer said. That's not the point. But if you look in the beginning and at the end, you see a bit of the history that he gives, the background. And that is what we always try to take out from the Svarim. So the Chasam Sofer started off that Be'etzem, as soon as the king died, it was in March, I believe, that he died. And the Chasam Sofer gave notice to the Kehillah, to the Rosh Kehillah, that he wants to give a hesped. Now, he brings a very interesting thing. They told him that it's against protocol to give a hesped before the Levaya. Because at the Levaya, there's going to be the official eulogies. And it takes many days, as we know, you know, between the death and the Levaya. So they told the Chasam Sofer that, you know, you don't give a hesped before. And by the way, this is a true thing that happened now. Someone told me that they made a hesped or something, a tribute in the St. John's Wood Synagogue. And they invited John Major, who was a prime minister here in the past. And he told them... they invited... I know what I'm saying. I know what I'm talking about. I did my history. So they invited John Major to come and speak, and he told them that he wouldn't be able to eulogize because he doesn't want to give a hesped before the official eulogy. So instead, they got Theresa May. But that's the background. One of the organizers told me that. So it was very interesting because, you know, this is in 2022, but this goes back in 1835. We're talking about almost 200 years ago. The same story that they told him, the Rosh Kehillah told him, we're going to the Levaya, and the Levaya happened to be in Budapest, and they said that before we go to the Levaya, we can't make that asifa. So then the Chasam Sofer says, okay. So as soon as you come back, he says he did it right away. Why? Because once they came back, he had a day or two, and it would be toch shloishim yoim koidem achag. The halacha is that you're not supposed to make a hesped within 30 days of a yontev, and not many people know that because it's interesting that in America you don't hear about it; they're not makbid on it. But here in London, I've heard many times they make the cheshm. Let's say, for example, you want to make a hesped in Iyar, you'll only make it until Vav Iyar, because once it's Vav Iyar, it's already Toch Shloshim of Shavuos. So the Chasam Sofer made the hesped on Tammuz Esther, which is mamash the last day before the 30 days before Pesach, and he says that he uses the Loshon of Loi Es Atzel Behespedoi, which is a Loshon that Chazal say used on Hamis Atzel Behespedoi Shatamut Chochem. And the whole concept that you should make a hesped within 30 days is, you know, we know about it, but Mehecha Teis said that when you're going to speak about the king, that you should do such a thing. But the Chasam Sofer held that way, that he didn't want to make a hesped within 30 days of Pesach, so he rushed to make it on Tanis Esther, and then he says the Torah, if the Olam wants, we can say the whole Torah, but there's more history. But anyway, the point is that we see that this was taken very, very seriously. It wasn't stam, you know, abi. It was, you know, taken seriously, and the concept of halacha were applied to this as well. To say that you can't give a hesped because it's within 30 days is a big chiddush, but that's what it's printed, it's written down. The Chasam Sofer wrote it, and they printed it in the sefer. Now there are many other things that we find benegea the inyan of kovod of malchus. The halacha says that because of kovod of malchus, you're allowed to be over on isurei derabbanon. The Gemara says that they would kehanim would be matama themselves tuma derabbanon in order to go see a king. Medalgim hayinu al aroinus. So here we're not talking about where you have to be reactive, that there's a situation and you have to do something. Even to be proactive, they would never know. If you wouldn't come, you wouldn't turn up, they would never know that you didn't come. They don't even know you exist. But Afal Piken, the halacha says that there's an inyan to do things mishum kvod malchus, and it's pasken and shulchan aruch. So the history goes that this Franz Josef. So the way it works is somewhere along the lines of that in 1835 this Franz he died. And his son took over. Now, his son was Ferdinand. I'm not sure which number he had after his name. but he didn't. He was only there for 12 years. And those 12 years, so from 1835 to 1848, 47, and then another year till the next king came. So this Ferdinand was the son of the Franz the First, and he was not good to the Eden. And he put a lot of gezeiros and taxes, and it was a very, very hard time for the Eden at that time. But then, after 12 years, in 1847, he died, and his nephew, Franz Josef, the famous Franz Josef, was coronated as king, and he was 18 years old. Now, I'm not sure exactly how it worked, but somewhere along the lines that there were different countries, which today there's Austria, there's Hungary, and in that time, somehow he ruled over many of the countries. Franz Josef, there's someone here in Golders Green that has a certificate, like a diploma of sorts, or a certificate for his Elterzeide, who was a Rav in one of the Kehillahs in Galicia. And he got a certificate from the king. It's the original certificate. So it's, you know, beautifully written, calligraphy and so on. And basically, it's the titles. You have the titles of the king. The King Franz Josef, King of, right? So the two dots, and then the list goes on and on. And atke de kach, that they don't have enough room on the paper. So it's et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he basically ruled over, you know, maybe he counted every bus stop that he had, whatever. So you know, he was very proud of it. But you know, as far as, to give us an idea, it was basically Austria, it was Hungary, it was Bohemia, and Moravia, which is today is part of Czechoslovakia, or Czech. Mainly Czech, Bohemia and Moravia, to give us a bit of understanding. Prague is the capital of Bohemia, and Nikolsburg is the capital of Moravia. We're talking about a very, very big area, but it went even further. It went all the way to Galicia. Kruka was part of his kingdom, and even Italy, the northern Italy, was very much part of his kingdom. Now, there are many, many, many tshuvas in the Chasam Sofer, who was considered one of the prominent Rabbonim, you know, who was at the forefront of that kingdom and very much recognized by the king. So the Chasam Sofer brings many stories that happened, many shailas. And the king, he gave a certain autonomy to the Kehillas that he wouldn't allow certain things to happen unless the Rabbonim gave their approval. And the Chasam Sofer brings there that one of the stories, we may have mentioned it in the past, that there was this wealthy, wealthy woman that got divorced from her husband, but not she got divorced. She gave a divorce, she got rid of her husband, and she wanted to marry a Kohen. And, you know, obviously you can't marry a Kohen. So the argument was that the Torah says, Isha Gerusha Me Isha, that a woman that's divorced from her husband. But here it's the other way around. You know, it's the man was divorced from the wife. So they wanted to allow it. So it went, you know, the Rabbonim didn't allow it, so it went higher and higher, and it got to the desk of the king. So the king said, the only way that you can allow it is if the Rabbonim give a stamp of approval. Lamaise, the Chasam Sofer brings that the whole story, how in the end it did not go through. And there are many other stories. Pesach, we were learning about Berchas HaGoymel. So we learned about a certain story that happened about a Rav in Italy, that in Trieste, that came by boat, and he said Berachas HaGoymel at night, and they had tainus on him. Where does a Shaila from Trieste, which is in Italy, where does it come to the Chasam Sofer? The Teretz is, because he was considered, you know, one of the chief Rabbonim of the kingdom of Franz Josef, or he was earlier in France, but that, you know, that area. So because of that, he had a shaychus to these things. So basically, in 1867, Franz Josef, so just to put things into perspective, he was coronated in 1848. In 1867 is when he came to the city of Kruka. And as we said, Kruka was in Galicia, and Galicia was part of the kingdom, the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. And the visit came out on Yom Kippur Shechaliyas B'Shabbos, right? He didn't look at our calendar, and you know, that's when he came. Now, what was the Shaila? The Shiloh was that there was an old-time minig that when a king would come, they would greet him with Sifrei Torah. And there was no Erev in Krukah, so that means they would have to carry the Sefer Torah on the street without an Erev. So the Shiloh was, are you allowed to or are you not allowed to? And this is a Shiloh that came to Reb Shimon Sofer. He was the roof of Krukah, he was the son of the Chasam Sofer. And basically, he sent this Shiloh to his brother, the Ksav Sofer, who took over his father, the Chasam Sofer in Preshbar, and he sent this Shiloh to his older brother. And Lemaise, there's a whole pilpul, and his miskona is La'acha she'kvar nahagu mikedem lotzeis likras ha'melech im Sefer Torah. This was an old time minig that they used to greet the king with the Sefer Torah. Ikvar hirgulubay, the goyim, the kings, they look out for it. In other words, for them, this is a big sign of kavod that they come out with the Sefer Torah. There's a famous story which I mentioned when we're doing the Chanot Sefer Torah, that in one of the Sfardi cities, they also had this minig about greeting the king with the Sefer Torah. But the Sfardim have the case, the silver case, different than us. So there was some kanoi that decided, you know, how are we're schlepping a Sefer Torah for the king. There's halacha, you're not supposed to schlep a Sefer Torah, stamazo, even for a minion. And here you're schlepping it out for the king. So he decided to take out the scroll from inside. And just, you know, the king doesn't need the inside. He just needs the outside. So he'll get the outside. Some Malshin, some Moiser, found out about it, and he let them know. And it would have been, we can imagine the disaster it would have been. But Lemaise, the story goes that at night, the father of the Shamas came into a dream to his son and told him, go check those cases that you're planning to take out, check them out. And he checked them out, he saw they were empty. So he put it back, and when the king came, the officers were going to check because they were tipped off. They opened it up and they found the scrolls. But again, this is something which is very, very much part of our history, that we would always go and greet the monarchy with the Sefer Torah. So says the Ksav Sofer that if you're not going to do it, Hamoneya bedovazeh mer la'ayin kemazalzel umoyrit kvod ha'melech. It's definitely an affront. It's definitely being mevazeh the melech. Ubezeh vada is sura ikah. It's an iser to do so. Vegam yesh b'mishum eva. So eva is another set of rules that there are many things that we do because of eva. And vekam b'dvar mitir mishum chashash eva. And he says ma'itama nere lefi anizdati lahaskim imcha lemaise lahoiro asho. Obviously, as a one-off, that you can do that. In other words, Reb Shimon Sofer, he felt that way, but he wanted, you know, someone else to agree with him. So this brother says, 100% you can do so. And then many times later, you also had such stories that were based on this story, because this was in 1867. There was another story later that they, in some shuls, the minig was that when the king would come, they would not come. When it was the king's birthday, they would change the paroichas. Just if our gaboim are looking for another another reason to change the paroichas. So anytime it was the king's birthday, they had a special paroichas for that. And the maise, they forgot or whatever it was, and it's Shabbos, and the paroichas wasn't changed. So he was matir, so they didn't have a goy. So they were matir, even with a yid, which it could be a shaila. It's not a deraisa, it's a derabonon, maybe, not so clear. In our shul, the minig is we always change it with a goy. We don't change it ourselves. We do change it on yontev. But so that's the right thing to do. But in that case, there was no goy available, and they pasken that you can do it, because it's even less of an iser than carrying without an eruv, and that's a psak based on this ksav sofer. So again, we see how, you know, there were certain things that were done in such a way that to honor the monarchy, and even if it meant being over on Isurei the Rabbonim. Now, with this Franz Josef, he lived a long life, so there were many things that happened throughout his life. So in 1853, in February of 1853, there was an attempt to kill him, to assassinate him. He was walking I think it was in Vienna, and some assassin, because there was, you know, politics there with Hungary, At that time, he was the Austrian Empire. Hungary wanted to separate. They wanted, you know, to go on their own. So one, you know, one of the guys was tried to kill him, and literally he was saved by his collar, because he wore a collar that was very stiff, and he tried to stab him in the neck, and the collar saved him. Now at that time, it was interesting. The giving a drosha, the cover the king, and the cover the fact that he was saved, wasn't a choice. It was an order. There was an order that all the kehillas had to give a drosha, the cover the king. So they say a story that Belz was part of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire at that time, and the first Belz Rebbe was Shulam Belz was the Rebbe at that time, and he knew that he had to give the drosha. But Lamaise, for some reason, it didn't happen right away. So he was told again and again. And Lamaise, he gave a drosha. Now, one of the things that they would say about Franz Josef is that, you know, Franz Josef was, as we said, almost 70 years. And he spanned quite a few generations. Just like, you know, we know. I don't think there's anyone in this room that remembers, you know, a different monarch than the Queen Elizabeth, right? Maybe, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to I didn't mean to insult anyone. But yeah, but Lemaise, Lemaise, you know, the if you span many generations, and you have a problem, because, you know, what the young need, the old don't like, what the old like, the young don't need, and especially in a king, like in those times, where he take all the shots, here it's more or less, it's just for show. But in the times of Franz Josef, he was the buck stopped by him. He made the decisions. So, but he was such a benevolent king. He was mamash considered one of the most kindest kings as far as the Jewish community were concerned. So the most many of the droshes, I've pulled out so many different droshes from the Makaveru, from Shafaran, and then the Chasam Sofer, and in Belz, and all over. And basically, what pasuk would they use? Yomim al yemei melech toisif, shenoisof kamoi doir vadoir. So they used to say pshat hazoi. V'derech klal, if a king lives long, there's no maila, because when he dies, there's another king, right? And there could be a maila if you have a younger king, because the younger king will be more sensitive to the needs of the younger people. But he says that's only if someone doesn't understand. But for this king, because he is shnoisav kamoi doir vadoir, which means that, you know, he can adapt to each generation and give everyone what they need. So on such a king, it's yomim al yamei melech toisev, that, you know, let him live longer. Who knows, you know, vusadzan, you know, who the next one will be. And taka, you know, he was zoicha to that arichas yomim. But he didn't have an easy life. In 1872, his mother died. So again, you had to, you know, the droshes started coming and everyone had to give for the queen mother. But then in 1889, his son, his one and only son, Rudolf, died. But as we said before, he committed suicide, and we explained perhaps maybe why. And then in August of 1898, his wife was killed. She was assassinated in Geneva, in Switzerland. And again, you know, the killers had to mourn with him, and so on. Now, he actually died in the middle of First World War. Now, First World War, he was the one, or at least his country, was the one who caused the First World War. As many people may know the history, that he had no children left, right? He has only one son. So who was going to be the crown prince? The crown prince was his brother's. So, some places it says his brother's son, or brother's grandson, but it was a nephew, either a nephew or a great nephew. And he went with his wife, he went to Bosnia, and he was killed in Sarajevo, he was assassinated there. You know, it was all part, because all these different countries that we know that have different names, in those times, they're all part of the big empire, and they all wanted independence. So Lemaise, he already had an old cheshbon with Bosnia, because they always wanted to go on their own. So now he gave them an ultimatum: but he made sure that they won't be able to accept the ultimatum because he was looking for a reason to go to war, and that is what caused First World War, because all of a sudden there was politics there with Russia and Germany, and all of a sudden everyone got dragged in, and he died in the middle of 1916, which is the middle of the First World War. And Lemaisa, they didn't coronate the next one. In other words, the first crown prince, the first in line, was killed. So now he had a brother. So his brother, he would have been the thing. His name was Charles, and this Charles would have been the king. But the problem was that he didn't. He became the king because they didn't make a coronation. But he became the king. They said that when the war will end, they'll make a coronation. But when the war ended, that's when they split up all these countries, and Austria is what it is today, a small country compared to what it was. So this King Charles, he was exiled. He was thrown out of Austria, and I believe that he lived out his life in Switzerland. And he died, I think, in 1922. His wife died in 1989. She lived till 96, but they say that she was always in mourning. From when her husband died in 1922, she wore black for the rest of her life, and she was basically, you know, alone and so on. But again, as I said, you know, this history may be a bit boring, but it's the context of it. A very interesting anecdote that we find is that when Charles became king, there was a roof in Vienna by the name the Altstadter Roof, and the king came to Vienna, and people went and they went to make a brucha on the king, and he didn't go out. This roof didn't go out, and they asked him, "I don't understand. Why aren't you going out? Everyone is going out." So he said that he remembers we're talking about 70 years ago, when Franz Josef was coronated, the Belzeruf, the first Belzeruf, Reb Shulam of Belz, said, "I see the king of Austria, but I don't see a king after him." And he says he believes that he won't have Arichas Yomim. So it's a bracha levatola, he says. It's a bracha levatola to go and make a bracha on the king. So he didn't go out and take a kachava. He never really became, in other words, he became king because that's what it says in the books, that when the king dies, then the next one becomes king, but they never coronated him. So he was margish that making a bracha would be a bracha levatola. But anyway, what we see from all of this is how Gedolei Yisrael, you know, who had better things to do with their time, but this was very much important to them, that to be part of it and to show the respect and to, you know, to take part in what's going on. Just a small little thing, and I'll finish with that, is that there has been going around a clip about a story with Queen Elizabeth getting a bracha from the Shatz Rebbe. So it's not clear whether it's true or not. Someone told me that he asked a son, an einikel of the Shatz Rebbe, and he says, you know, he can't confirm it, but he did say that he heard that Lord Jacobowitz, Zecherin Levracha, once had an audience with the Queen, and he wanted to give her a bracha, so she told him, "I have a blessing from Rabbi Moskowitz, which is still in effect to this day." Now, maybe we can try to confirm that. Mm-hmm. But I do have a small little clip, a copy of a clip from a newspaper in America, from the Wisconsin Jewish Chronicle in 1948. That has their a thing which is translated from a piece of a newspaper in Hungary. In 1929, the king here in England was King George V, and he was very, very ill. And that's something which is confirmed. You can read about it. And he sent to the Weizner Roof in Weizen in Hungary, the Master Lemelech, he was a big poil yeshias. he sent that they should daven for the king, and the Rebbe promised him that, you know, he's going to get well, and you know, he didn't die at that time. I mean, eventually he died, but the point is that he felt. Why did he go to King George V? Because at that time they held themselves as protector of Palestine, and this Ma'aseh LeMelech, the Vayetzeh Neruv, was considered the biggest, you know, one of the most famous rabbunim. So he wanted a brucha from this roof for his health. So we see that in a certain way it goes both ways. We're mispalel b'shloim shomalchus, and we daven and we offer them brochas, and they appreciate it, and they understand that these brochas work, and you know, he could have gone to himself, right? He could have gone to the mirror, because he's the head of the Church of England, right? He knew where to go, so you know, it shows you know how they held us, and it, as we said, it's a mutual respect, and you know, and this is something that we have to appreciate. And we, Chas v'Shalom, we shouldn't undermine it in any way, shape, or form. And fakert, as Chazal say, if you mispalo b'shloim shemalchus, then the life, you know, can be normal b'ezes Hashem. And our bracha is that we should always be zoicha through the inyan of understanding about melochim and about kings, that we should be able to appreciate what the avoida of kedesh tam lichuni aleichem, which is now coming up in Rosh Hashanah, that anyone that, you know, understands and sees what they're going to put into the coronation of the Melech Bos of Adam, Charles III, we need to do within us to the Melech Malchei Amlochem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I just wanted to mention that today's shiur is sponsored by Mr. Kahan for Refuah Shleima for Shmuel Ben Miriam. I'm out.